entertainment, sports, and radio's best guest list. Live from the Zone Radio Studios on Broadway on WZON Z62, WKIT HD3, and at downtownwithrichkimble.com. This is Downtown.
Well, hello there and a good Sunday morning to you. Welcome in to the best of Downtown. On this 18th day of November, Rich Kimble and Carrie Haskell here. And our weekly look back at some of our favorite recent conversations, brought to you as the show is every Monday through Friday by Cross Insurance, where security meets strength. On this morning's program, we'll hear from John O'Hurley, star of Seinfeld, of course, and this coming Thursday comes into our homes for the 17th consecutive year on Thanksgiving Day as the host of the National Dog Show. Comedy legend Paula Poundstone chatted with Carrie Haskell earlier this week. We'll hear that conversation. Our friend Colin Fleming on the release of a new Orson Welles movie, The Other Side of the Wind. And we get things rolling by looking back at our recent conversation with good friend of the show, Charlotte Wilder from Sports Illustrated, SI.com. Charlotte's got a lot of things going on with a podcast and a television show and, apparently quite a desire to talk to people about her experience watching the film A Star is Born. Here's Charlotte Wilder of Sports Illustrated.
I enjoyed watching the movie. I have a lot of thoughts about the movie, and I'm not completely positive on it. I'm going to be honest.
Really? What was wrong with it? What got on your nerves?
Well, it was a great movie about a man.
Oh,
and a terrible movie about a woman.
Uh-oh.
Like, they didn't, in my opinion, make Lady Gaga's character quite enough developed on her own. But, I mean, they were both fantastic in terms of, like, the performances. But, you know, I felt like I could write a thesis on the issues with it.
Well, and is that on Bradley Cooper? I know he did everything else. He was a producer, director, wrote some of the songs. Was he also involved in working on the script? Do we hang this on him?
I don't know. I mean, yeah, I think we could a little bit. I really enjoyed it, and I thought he was great. But they could have done a little more with her.
That makes sense. Well, I haven't seen it yet, so I'll withhold judgment. But usually, I tend to agree with your assessment of things. So.
Oh well, thank you. You're very kind. It's fun. It's fun.
You know what else was fun? That Red Sox World Series. My goodness.
Wasn't that just the best?
I'm getting kind of jaded here in my my advanced years, but man, that team, they made me really care about baseball and care about the Red Sox again. They were just so much fun to watch.
I could not agree more. I think, and I've talked to a bunch of people who are not from Boston and, you know, who really generally hate Boston teams, and they're like, you know what? I have to give it to the Red Sox. Like, that was a fun team. That was a delightful group of players. And they were also just so incredibly good that you couldn't really be mad about it. It was like, oh my God, we just watched one of the most incredible teams ever, maybe the most amazing team ever, do something remarkable. And, you know, that's something to celebrate.
Did you make it through that entire 18-inning thing?
No, if the game ended at 3:30, I think, I went to bed at 3:20.
Oh.
I went to bed. Well, I'll tell you why, Rich. I went to bed in the 17th inning because I had a feeling the Sox were going to lose, and I didn't want to stay up and have it be the end of the game and have the Sox lose. I just knew it was going to happen, and I was like, you know what? I don't want to see this. So I went to bed, and I woke up, and I was right.
Well, absolutely. But the stories about what happened after that game with Cora calling a meeting with the players and then everybody going up and giving Nathan Eovaldi these big minute-long hugs. And man, that was clearly the turning point in the whole series for them.
Oh, my God, I know. I mean, what he did there, what Eovaldi gave everything he had. And he left it all out there, and it was truly inspiring. To watch someone, you know, it was selfless. Like, he didn't have to do that. He's a free agent. I mean, now that the season's over, if we don't re-sign him, I will be heartbroken. But, like, that was a real act of selflessness. And it was incredible to watch someone dig so deep and come out with such an incredible performance. I thought, you know, the game four win should have belonged to him.
We're talking with Charlotte Wilder of Sports Illustrated, SI.com. What's going on the podcast, the most valuable podcast? What's coming up for us?
Everyone, if you're listening, please subscribe to the most valuable podcast. It's me and my producer of the Wilder Project on SITV, Jessica Smetana, who is not only an incredible coworker, but one of my best friends. And we just talk about sports, and I guess I would say it's sort of a sports comedy podcast is the closest I would come. But yeah, what do we have coming up this next? Well, in a week, we are going to the Notre Dame Syracuse game at Yankee Stadium because Jess is a huge Notre Dame fan, and I've never been to a Notre Dame game before, so I'm very excited about that. And we should have some pretty funny stories for everyone. But this next episode, we're going to cover the Bryce Harper rumors. We've got a bunch of Steelers talk because there is a lot of drama going on in Pittsburgh right now. And it's chapter 4 of the story I am making up about Gritty, the Philadelphia Flyers mascot's life. So, a lot going on, Rich.
Which I love because I think I speak for all sports fans. I wanted to know the backstory on Gritty.
Oh, yeah. Totally. So I took it upon myself to make one up for him, which, we'll see how that evolves. But we also have some pretty fun stuff involving Gritty coming up on the next season of the show, which launches in February. So everyone should stay tuned for that.
The Wilder Project, absolutely terrific. And you've gotten a lot of great press for it, too. And you talked about comedy. And there's certainly an element of stand-up to this. Is that something you'd ever try?
Oh my God, Rich, it's my dream. It's truly, thank you, first of all, for those kind words. That's really sweet of you. I'm super psyched about the second season because we're changing some stuff up, doing a lot of in the field pieces, some sort of shorter segments that are even more comedy focused. And I'm super excited about it. But yeah, stand-up is a dream. I actually just said to Jess today, I was like, I kind of want one of the segments to be me trying stand-up for the first time. I have a set. I've just never performed it. I just need to get up the courage.
Well, I think you should. I think it would be great. And I love the fact that you both approach sports as entertainment, which I think is the way it ought to be approached. What's the best thing from your perspective going on in sports right now?
The best thing going on, definitely most valuable podcast, right? No, I don't know. I think that it depends how you define best. I think that NFL, the quality of football this year in the NFL has been really, really high. We've gotten some incredible games, some amazing performances, some fun new players, some old players setting more impressive records than what they've done before. And for me, after two seasons of people wringing their hands about the ratings, is it because of people kneeling? Is it blah, blah, blah? Like, no, it was because the football wasn't that great. And this year, we've had games that are truly fun to watch. Like, I'm excited about Thursday Night Football tonight, that's really saying something.
Well, it's actually a good game tonight, or it looks like it should be a good game.
Yeah, Steelers-Panthers. I mean, you've got the Steelers on short rest, which is kind of interesting. And the Panthers have become a team that's actually kind of fun to watch this season. So I'm pretty psyched about it. I think, what I like about Thursday Night Football is Thursday nights, you're like, okay, I can make it. And knowing that you can kind of go sit on the couch or go to a bar and like chill and just have something to completely take your mind off of everything else in the world is a nice thing.
Well, yeah, and not all football is great. I believe that one of us, I would put you ahead of me, could probably be next in line to be the Buffalo Bills quarterback.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I've got a tight spiral, Rich.
I've seen that. I've seen you, it's not, it's touch. It's not about the distance. It's about having the touch.
Oh, totally. Yeah, no, Nathan Peterman, God help us all. I don't know what's going on with the Bills. I mean, you get Josh Allen, you draft Josh Allen, number 3, 4, 2? I don't even know, some absurd three, I think, four, I don't know. But, and then he's hurt. He had some knees that were good, but he was also kind of trash. And Nathan Peterman has thrown, I think, more interceptions than touchdowns ever. So it's just really an exercise in patience for those fans. I'm very impressed with Bills Mafia right now. I will tell you that much.
Charlotte Wilder, SportsIllustratedSI.com. If you haven't already, check it out. Subscribe to the Most Valuable Podcast. You're going to love it. Charlotte, we always love the chance to talk with you. Appreciate you making time for us this afternoon.
Oh, Rich, thank you so much. I love talking to you, and you're the best show on radio.
Well, I mean, after your podcast, of course.
Oh, well, you know, podcast radio is different.
Have a great Thanksgiving, Charlotte. We'll catch you again soon.
You too. Talk to you soon, Rich.
Charlotte Wilder of SportsIllustratedSI.com with us here on Downtown. When we return, Carrie talks with comedy legend Paula Poundstone on Downtown.
At Quirk Motor City, you get a huge selection of quality pre-owned vehicles priced to fit any budget. Plus, the Quirk Motor City pre-owned difference, with a limited warranty that's three times longer than the average dealer's pre-owned warranty. Free main state inspections for the life of the vehicle. A free Carfax vehicle history report. And Quirk Motor City's certified pre-owned 118-point inspection. It's your quality pre-owned car. Find it at Quirk Motor City in Bangor, Belfast, Augusta, and Portland. View our pre-owned inventory online at quirkauto.com.
It may not be prime biking season, but it's always a good time to make sure your cycle is in great shape. And there's only one place to go to do that. Slipping Gears Cycling, 753 Stillwater Avenue in Bangor. Bangor's only full-time cycling sales and service experts. They offer outstanding service and a huge stock. Make sure you like them on Facebook to get updates, shop in person or online at slippinggears.com.
Since its founding in 1954, Cross Insurance has grown from a small family-owned agency that started in Bangor, Maine, into one of the largest super-regional insurance agencies in New England. With a network of offices throughout New England, Cross Insurance works with top carriers to provide maximum value to you, your family, and your business. We are proud to be the official insurance broker of the New England Patriots and would welcome the chance to provide security for your team. For more information, visit crossinsurance.com. Cross Insurance, where security meets strength.
Pretty sure this should be considered a public service announcement, so in advance, you're welcome. I just went to the Ground Round in Bangor and ordered off their special menu and got the bacon, chicken, mac and cheese. It's curly cavatappi pasta with creamy gouda and cheddar sauce topped with applewood smoked bacon and perfectly grilled chicken. Luckily, I saved room for dessert because right now the Ground Round has this amazing Reese's empanada, and it's exactly what you'd imagine. Creamy chocolate and peanut butter inside a folded and fried pie crust. If your mouth is watering right now, head to the Ground Round on Audland Road in Bangor. GroundRound.com.
Success. For some, it's the result of luck. For the Maine Black Bears, it's the result of planning, determination, and hard work. Success may have brought you financial rewards, and now in many ways, life isn't simpler, it's more complex. Your choices impact more people and can have longer lasting effects than ever before. At ClearPoint Financial, we understand your challenges. We can help navigate today's changing financial landscape and help you pursue your financial goals. ClearPoint Financial, the official financial advisor of the Maine Black Bears.
Hi, this is Mike Toole. See what ClearPoint Financial can do for you. Call us today at 307-7718.
Hey, we're back here on Downtown, the best of for a Sunday morning. Rich Kimball and Carrie Haskell, who got to talk with Paula Poundstone the other day. She had to record earlier in the day, Carrie, and yeah, I couldn't get there, but you handled it. And what's always fun, getting to talk to Paula Poundstone. It doesn't require a lot of heavy lifting on the part of the interviewer.
No, it really doesn't. She tends to talk quite a lot about whatever you want to throw at her, and always a fun time to see what her thoughts are.
Paula coming to Maine. She'll be at Jonathan's in Ogunquit on the 24th. And here's her conversation with Carrie from earlier this week.
Paula, thanks so much for taking the time to chat with us today.
Well, thanks for having me.
Now, before we get too much further, I need to pass along my missing person report to you. I can verify that your missing survivalist guest, Thomas Coyne, is not in the WZON studios on Broadway here in Bangor. I also had our engineer check for you. Our transmatter shack on Kings Mountain in Orrington, he's not there
right, either. That was one of our greatest suspicions, was that he was located there at this time. But for those on our podcast, nobody listens to Paula Poundstone. We were going to have this guest one day, for those who don't know about this. We are one evening, a guy named Thomas Coyne. And he was a survivalist, or is a survivalist, and he was going to explain to us what you do when you encounter a bear. And so the time, you know, we get ready to do the show, we're sitting in the studio waiting, and Thomas Coyne never showed up. Which I think that for a survivalist not to make it to the show suggests some rigorous conditions. So ever since then, we've been looking for him. And, you know, we called, we emailed him, we texted him, we used all the methods that we had contacted him to be on the show to begin with, and never got a response. So ever since then, we've had our listeners scouring the country, telling us where he isn't. And we have a map, in fact, on, I think it's the Facebook page for Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone. We have a map that shows where he isn't.
Well, you can check off, studios in Bangor, Transmitter Shack in Orrington. He's not there. I'll continue to, search Eastern Maine as much as I can for you.
We really appreciate it. Constant vigilance.
So, yeah, and if anybody doesn't know what's going on with your podcast, they need to. It is a great, great podcast. One of the
that's so nice to hear. Thank you.
Yeah, I enjoy it a lot. The weekly house band is a lot of fun. You cover a lot of different instruments. Most recently, this last one was the vibraphone player. You've had cello, accordion, double bass, trumpet, everything. My personal favorite was your the pipe organ for your Halloween special.
Oh, nice to hear. I'll pass that along. Yeah, we had a, speaking of pipes, we had a bagpipe player one night who was really kick-ass. I mean, we sort of figured that the bagpipe would be, sort of hard to listen to, and maybe, that there was something just sort of funny about bagpipes. But I got to say, the bagpipe was one of my favorite house bands. And stay tuned, listeners, because the didgeridoo is scheduled soon.
Ooh, that's a can't miss one. I have a feeling.
I was talking. We had a production meeting yesterday over the phone, and we were talking to Adam. And Adam, Adam's a musician himself. My partner, Adam Felber, and so he often talks to the musicians about when we need them to play and that sort of thing. And so we would say, well, we want. Especially at the beginning of the show, really upbeat music, and we're like, okay, we have the didgeridoo coming up. I think I don't know. I'm not sure I've ever heard upbeat didgeridoo.
I'm looking
forward to it though.
I've heard it a few times, but no, it's I've never heard an upbeat tune played.
No, I think it sounds a bit. I don't know what a moose sounds like in real life, but my guess is there's a similarity.
Now the pipe organ, and you've had other ones too, but he had a theme. The pipe organist, whose name I'm not going to remember, unfortunately, he had a theme song ready for go that he played for you. I thought that was one of the high contenders. Have you made a final decision on a theme song for the show yet?
Oh, we've been having a theme song contest since the inception of the podcast, which, by the way, is called Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone, and. No, we haven't settled on a theme song. We're continuing to ask people to submit them, and we've had a rich array. So we play like some samples of the theme songs here and there, and we've gotten almost every genre now. I mean, I don't think there's been like a Gregorian chant one yet, but the night is young.
Your guest list. We like to say that Downtown has Maine's best guest list due to wonderful guests like yourself, but your podcast definitely has one of the most eclectic guest lists, especially when you start looking at the careers of the people you're talking to.
We had a woman come in to talk about mold, house mold.
Yeah.
And she was, what's funny? She was great. She was bubbly and enthusiastic. I mean, part of I'm trying to get people that can explain to me, stuff that I just need to know to survive. Like if I was moving out of my parents' house, what would I need to know? And see, every time I suggest something, a lot of my coworkers are like, "Well, that seems a little down. I don't see where you're going to get. I don't see what's going to be funny about that." And then these people will come on, and they're so into their jobs, they don't call themselves exterminators anymore. What are they? Pest control. The pest control guy. He was this young guy that was so enthusiastic, not in a morbid way about pest control, but really, you know, he really understood the psyche of rats.
Yeah, well, he's helping you with your various infestations that you've had. Silverfish,
yeah,
which
infestation of the week segment sometimes because, yeah, I've had rats. I've had big logie flies.
Oh.
I've had, of course, the little silverfish things. I fortunately have not yet had roaches, but I know that somewhere after the mold, they're on their way.
Now, talking with all of these folks, have you sparked that fire for a career alongside or instead of comedy?
I'm always on the lookout for a career where I don't have to do any self-promotion, where I'm not stuck saying I'm going to be at the blah 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 on December 31st. But so far, I don't have the skills to do any of these jobs. That seems to be the biggest problem. I've been a comic for 39 years. And although I do believe you can teach an old dog new tricks, some of these I'm not sure. We did have a real estate woman one night, but I don't think I'm effervescent enough.
She was very bubbly.
She was very bubbly, and I got the sense that, and she was like the new age realtor, you know, that do stuff like. Like she had one of the houses she was selling, she had the listing for, they had like a sushi party. I'm not sure how that sells a house, but I guess it does. There was a lot of like, have a party at the house that you're selling or, it's way beyond have the smell of baked cookies now. it's way beyond pointing out that a room is spacious. Now they have all sorts of tricks too, and I don't know. I'm not so into tricks.
We're talking with Paula Poundstone here on Downtown. She's got a show coming up in Ogunquit on November 24th. Now, moving
to beloved Jonathan's. I love Jonathan's.
Jonathan's, yeah, it is a great, great place to see a show. Move away from the podcast for a little bit. Any thoughts on the election results from last week? Or
yeah, you know what's funny? I was watching the NewsHour last night on PBS, and it's my favorite news broadcast. And this is, I don't know, several days, anyways, after the election, and they were talking about, they finally came to the conclusion that indeed it was a blue wave, which Trump and some of the Republicans are so good at messaging, that even after the Democrats, you know, really had a very successful night, they were still able to convince even the Democrats that they didn't. It's masterful. I mean, it's truly masterful. If it was used for good and not bad, sometimes it would be an amazing thing to see. But anyways, and California, I think Trump has actually gone to the border of California with a saw and is now trying to cut it off of the United States.
He's going to turn into Lex Luthor in Superman, where he's going to try to just, you know.
He really does not like us here in California.
Yeah,
he's had it with us. So that during our fires, he picks that time to criticize forest management. And by the way, I don't know when he became an expert in forest management. He said the other day that he knew more about the Fed than did the Fed chairman. And so his level of expertise, I was thinking the other day that if they ever do a biopic of me, Trump will probably play me because clearly he must know more about me than I do.
Well, just ask him. I'm sure he will explain the bits of your life that you're missing out on.
He does do this thing where, you know, he'll say something that's like an absurd fact, not a fact at all. He'll say something is an absurd notion, and then he'll go, everybody knows that, you know it. And every now and then I have to sort of stop for a minute and go, like, I have to think it over. Did I leave that in the closet in my brain somewhere and I've forgotten that I knew that? Like, no, that's because that's not so. It's an interesting time, especially, I think, for kids growing up now. Like, the idea that you have to put everything that's said through fact checking, and it didn't used to be that way. Every now and then Beaver Cleaver lied, but within 22 minutes they'd come to the bottom of it.
Yeah, everybody's got to walk around with the fact checker is a full time job for everybody now.
Yeah, it is pretty extraordinary. We were happy with many results here in California, and I imagine that Florida will have their numbers in sometime next year.
Well, yeah, they may decide, you know, whether Al Gore won or not by then.
Oh gosh, wouldn't you like that? You know, they do have to come up with a good counting system. Clearly, whatever they're doing there, it's like every time, you know, like the Chads didn't work, and then this time, I don't know. What was the state where the ballot? No, that might have been Georgia, where the ballot. A lot of people just didn't vote for a senator because of the way the ballot was designed.
Yeah, I think that was in Georgia. I remember hearing that. I don't remember the exact state.
Wendell, my assistant, just said Texas. I'm not certain, but anyway, it's one of those that was sort of. One of those that was authentication challenged to begin with. Like, they designed a ballot to sort of obscure the Senate race. So as a voter, by the way, I can't imagine going into the booth and accidentally not voting for a senator. Do you in Maine, do you have to vote for judges?
No. No, Maine judges are appointed. We vote for district attorneys, but not for judges.
We have to vote for them, and no one knows. I mean, no one knows it. Unless you're a criminal, no one knows judges. So, people, those who take voting very seriously are, you know, just days before the election scouring, just looking anywhere for some sort of judge hint.
Oh, yeah.
It's a strange system.
Yeah, Maine has offices like that. We have county treasurers that we're voting for and things like that that just nobody really knows who these people are until they see a name and have to try to decide which one to put in.
Right, yeah, we have the Board of Equalization. I don't even know what that is. I think it's like a couple of people who like hold up something that's a pound and then they hold up something that's 16 ounces and they go, yeah. Yeah, seems about the same.
I feel like I have to ask this before. I know we've only chatted for a little bit of time. Before we wrap up, I feel like I have to ask you if there's any life advice that you need to impart to me today.
Oh, life advice. Let me think here. Yes, I have a lot, as you well know. I can tell you what I did when I was younger. Because I have a lot of cats. I had an Ernie doll, you know, as in Bert and Ernie, mm-hmm. Ernie puppet. And, I kept him in the refrigerator, because my cats used to eat his hair. And, it's just something I want to pass along that people might be able to use. I took him out every now and then to enjoy his company, but for the most part, you know, being an adult, I didn't really play with the Ernie doll just that much. I just liked the presence of him. And he was as decorative in the refrigerator as he was going to be anywhere else where the cats could have eaten his hair.
Protect the dolls from the cats. Yeah. They can't get into the refrigerator.
You know, no one thinks to decorate the inside of the refrigerator. But, you know, opening that door and having a dopamine hit, that's what I got every time. And it wasn't just from the pecan pie that lay there waiting for me.
Well, that is helpful because I have a cat, and I would not put it past him to start eating things around my house. knickknacks of any variety.
I grew up with a cat that ate everything. This is where you learn things. My parents used to keep their will in the butter dish in the refrigerator. And they said that it was because if the house burned, that the refrigerator wouldn't. I don't know if that's true or not, but that's what they believed. And that's all fine, but, you know, every time we made toast, we thought, oh, Mom and Dad might die. So I don't know. That's why I say use your Ernie doll, not necessarily a will.
I have known people that have hidden cash in the freezer. I don't know the reason. I never asked the reason. I assumed it was because the robber wouldn't think to look there.
Took some of the cold cash out of there. You know what? I don't have enough to hide in the freezer, but now that you've said it, if I ever save any, that's where I'm putting it.
Well, once again, you can see Paula performing in Ogunquit on Saturday, November 24th at Jonathan's, or on the 25th at the Narrows Center for the Arts in Fall Rivers, Massachusetts. Thank you so much, Paula, for taking the time to chat with us today.
It was nice talking with you. Thank you. Take care.
That's Paula Poundstone talking with Carrie Haskell here on the Best of Downtown. When we come back, John O'Hurley, Jay Peterman himself, weighs in on quarterback Nathan Peterman and also talks about the upcoming National Dog Show this Thursday, Thanksgiving Day, across the country on the NBC television network. It's next on Downtown.
Sing. This holiday season, Penobscot Theater offers Naughty and Nice. What's nice? For those who love candy canes, and syrup, the main premiere of Elf, the musical, spreading Christmas cheer December 6th through the 30th at Bangor's Historic Opera House. What's naughty? Dominic Varney is disgruntled department store Elf Crumpet in the David Sedaris hilarious cult classic The Santa Land Diaries, December 13th through the 30th at Bangor Arts Exchange. Tickets at 942-3333 and penobscottheater.org.
Bennett Auto Center is the place to go for full-service auto care. From oil changes to engine jobs, they can handle your every need. Stop in at 24 Thatcher Street in Bangor and talk with the experienced local people at Bennett's. They offer great service, competitive prices on a wide range of tires, and best of all, people you can trust. Visit the website for more information at BennettAutoCenter.com. Give them a call at 947-0351 or drive on into Bennett Auto Center, 24 Thatcher Street, Bangor.
Welcome to Green Acres Kennel Shop. How many?
Two dogs and a cat, please.
Remember us?
Rex, Sparky, and me, Fiona.
Of course, this way. Your coats are all looking so shiny. Bowl for three.
Ruff! I'll take a side plate. Dog food's not really my taste.
Rex, try the Nutrisource. Delectable.
Yes, Master Sparky. Green Acres Kennel Shop only wants you to have wholesome, healthy food. So we prefer to work with small, family-owned companies who focus on pet foods.
Any specials this evening, Paul?
Of course, Master Rex. The usual lineup of dog and cat food. Foods from Pure Vita, Natural Planet Health Extension, Signature.
How are they prepared?
Green Acres offers dry food, wet, freeze-dried, even frozen raw food to fulfill your fussy feline fancy. Now, because you all come to Green Acres Kennel Shop so often, your meals are deeply discounted as part of our frequent buyer program.
Wow, sounds like we're the special ones.
Green Acres Kennel Shop, where every pet is special. 1653 Union Street, Bangor, greenacreskennel.com, and on Facebook. Takeout also available.
We love Green Acres Kennel Shop, our home away from home.
Downtown Orono has a new pub and eatery, the Common Loon Public House. The Common Loon is a casual, relaxed place for great food, drink, and company in the heart of the village and the perfect spot for a proper pint and a hearty or healthy meal. Open 7 days a week with lunch on Thursday and Friday and breakfast on the weekends, the Common Loon Public House features an eclectic menu with influences from over the ocean and close to home, serving up favorites for lunch and dinner like fish and chips, poutine, and pub burgers. Don't miss Wing Night Wednesdays, live music Fridays, and weekend mornings. The menu features hard-to-find dishes, such as a full English or Irish breakfast. We're also home to the only wood-fired brick oven in town and offer a variety of pizzas and British pasties. Enjoy a selection of imported beers, local brews, and signature cocktails. Happy hour specials 3 to 5 and after 9 every night. The Common Loon Public House is the place to be for EPL matches, international rugby, the Sox pennant race, Patriots, Bruins, and Black Bears. If you follow it, they can show it on their 7 HD screens. 36 Main Street in downtown Orono, the Common Loon Public House is the place to visit before, during, and after the game.
A treasure and a disaster all rolled into one. Nathan Peterman taught us that there is joy in failure. Now, one might have thought that an NFL record 5 interceptions in a starting debut all in the first half was a folly that could not be outdone. But they did not know our dear Nathan, however. Young Peterman continued to excel in his ineptitude, brandishing an all-time low passer rating and remarkably reaching double-digit interceptions in under 100 attempts, with a sum of picks four times greater than his touchdown count, and all the while managing to throw just as many TDs to the other team as he did his own. Oh, such a giving soul, that Nathan. A true enigma, a beacon of light in his plight, a delight. The flaming table for which Bills fans yearned. Oh, there is only one Nathan Peterman. Good night, sweet prince.
That is, of course, a friend of downtown, John O'Hurley, a piece that was circulated round the interwebs on SI.com. John is Jay Peterman talking about quarterback Nathan Peterman. We had a chance to talk with John just a couple of days ago about that and, of course, the upcoming National Dog Show. Here's John O'Hurley on the Best of Downtown. You are in Philadelphia right now, and, of course, this will be, hard to believe, the 16th broadcast of the National Dog Show.
Well, this is actually our 17th year.
17, like...
Number 17.
I didn't count my thumb.
You took a nap during the year there.
It was the first year. I wasn't paying attention.
Well, it's that tryptophan from the turkey.
That must be what it is. Well, you and David Fry and the crew work so well together. You have such amazing chemistry and always an exciting broadcast because, and for the people there as well, this is one of the last of the benched dog shows that allow the experience to be much greater for the people who were there in person.
It does. In fact, we'll have an audience of about 30,000 people there in the arena while we're shooting the National Dog Show. And, they get to enjoy a very special treat, which is to walk up and down the aisles and see the all 2,000 dogs that are competing that day. Each one of them is a breed winner at one point during the year in order to be eligible. So it is you're watching the best of the best there. Almost 200 different breeds, everything from large to small, and hairless to hairful. It's quite an array of dogs, and all of them have one common denominator. They all are lovable. And they round the edges off in our lives.
Do we have any new breeds this year that you'll be introducing us to?
Yes, we do. We have the I'm going to take a step back and then go running and then leap off the cliff when I say it. It's the Niederlandse Keukenhunden.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. You just only get one shot at saying that. That is it's a lovely little Dutch hunting dog. And then we have the Grand Dame Bien. Let me take one more. The Grand Basse Bichon Vendéen is the PBG. It's the larger version of the PBG, but it's a herding dog that is coming in, and it's a beautiful dog as well. Very, very pretty. And those are our two new breeds this year, so it'd be kind of fun to see them compete and see if they can garner the attention they deserve.
Now, the dog that you and David posed with for a publicity photo where you were using a part of their coat as a mustache, what breed was that?
Well, that's the Commodore. That's a beautiful breed. Yeah, it looks a little like Whoopi Goldberg there. Oh, she's so funny when I talk to her about that. It's a beautiful. That's a beautiful dog. It's so much fun, huh? Isn't it? With the little mustachio.
Now, what I love about the broadcast in recent years too is the interaction you have on social media, on Twitter, between I would say viewers, but specifically the canine viewers, and you love to see the reaction of other dogs sitting at home watching the competition.
Oh, I got to tell you, it is hysterical. It's to see the. To see the dogs watching the dog show. Some dogs relate to a television screen. Others do not. But the dogs that do are just remarkable in their reactions. They'll run up to the screen. They'll try to paw it. They'll try to sniff it. My favorite was when the dog walks around to the back behind the screen and is looking for the dogs that are back there.
My Ginger tends to watch, but she has favorites. I don't know why. She's a mixed breed. We don't even know. But she seems particularly drawn to the herding group.
The herd. Who knows why?
I don't know, except that she's always...
Well, you know, it points up that everybody has their favorite. But as I wrote in my children's book, The Perfect Dog, the dog that is perfect, the best in show, is the dog next to you.
Well, and speaking of that, A Perfect Dog has been turned into a musical, and it's going to be performed this weekend just outside of Philadelphia in Norristown. That's very exciting.
It isn't that fun. Yes, I wrote that book to my son as the answer to his question, Daddy, is the dog that is best in show, is the perfect dog? And I answered it in that poem, and that poem became a book, and the book is now a children's musical that's sung all over the world. And it's a thrill to see it have expanded and having spawned such a great deal of fun for kids everywhere. We'll be doing it during what was now National Dog Show Week here in Philadelphia.
And did I read that the idea for A Perfect Dog and turning it into a musical came to you or was suggested to you when you were doing the national tour of Spamalot?
Well, I was doing a special production of Spamalot out in St. Louis, and Eric Idle was out there for it. Eric is a dear friend and, of course, the producer of Spamalot from the original, and which I did for several years. And so we were talking about it. He said, what else is going on? I mentioned, the dog book that was coming out. He goes, we like to do children's musicals. So they optioned it, and they put the musical up, and lo and behold, that's what they brought back. It's a beautiful little musical, and it's a lot of fun. It really is. But it does underscore the statement that the dog that is perfect is the one next to you.
John O'Hurley will be hosting the National Dog Show presented by Purina next Thursday, of course, on the NBC television network. Now, do you and Johnny Weir use the same hairstylist?
Yeah, I know. No, mine's a little simpler to put into place than this.
Now, you got some great national exposure today on Sports Illustrated, SI.com. as you return to the role of Jay Peterman, to shed, perhaps a different perspective on namesake quarterback Nathan Peterman.
This has been kind of a give and take all year long. Actually, from last season as well. He has a lot of fans. They love him dearly, but he's just not performing, and they just keep saying, put the other Peterman in. In fact, they have done countless cartoons of me with a football there in my my concussion-proof hairstyle, and as a replacement for Nathan. But God bless him. Yeah, we sat down and did kind of a funny spoof on it yesterday. It was Peterman on Peterman. But the remarkable stat being that he's thrown as many touchdowns for the other team as he has for his own.
But of course, that, as you point out, is just because the Petermans are giving people.
We're very giving people. We're huggers.
John, we'd be remiss if we didn't ask you, because I know you're such a big fan, about this year's wonderful Boston Red Sox World Championship season.
I had quite a year, didn't I? And I embrace it all, and it was a thrilling year to see it all unfold. And I'm sure everybody up in the Portland area is proud of their Red Sox through their Red Sox team there, their farm team there. It's wonderful to see some of the great players. Benintendi come straight through the Sea Dogs, and it's wonderful to be able to watch them and watch them evolve into the players that that really are going to be the next generation of Hall of Famers. It was a great year. We expect to have another great year next year. I think the Sox are just as strong. I love the leadership. I love the camaraderie in the clubhouse, and certainly the execution on the field.
Now, John, you were doing Chicago. You were back playing Billy Flynn on Broadway, I know, in the early fall. Were you in New York when the Red Sox clinched?
No, I was actually, when we clinched, I was at the game.
Even better.
My buddy Brian Cranston, who's a friend of yours and the show, and I, we went with my son Will and his daughter. And so the four of us went to the final game there to watch the Dodgers. Now, Brian had to jump ship there because he is a Red Sox fan, but he is a congenital Dodger fan. So he had to slip on the blue that night. So we had to be red states, blue states. And and as my little son turned to me, he goes, when he sees all the when he saw the Dodger hats, we're wearing our Red Sox memorabilia there. He said, "Daddy, are we going to be killed tonight?"
Well, Brian will be on with us Monday.
The last game there was when as everybody filed out, all of the Dodgers fans filed out, and they had the celebration for the championship and the awarding of the trophy. About a third of the stadium there at Dodger Stadium all was wearing red.
Well, Brian will be on with us Monday, so we'll make sure to remind him which hat he needs to wear.
Yeah, he's doing. Hey, listen, he's doing a great show there and a great job on the show Network, the old that wonderful film from the 70s. There, it's just, and he's gonna. I put my bib down. He's gonna win a Tony for this as well.
Yeah, I think so. Looking forward to that, and of course, looking forward as we are and families are all over America. It's become such a great Thanksgiving tradition. The National Dog Show, presented by Purina, next Thursday on the NBC Television Network. John, it's always a delight for us to talk with you. We appreciate you visiting with us, and hope you and your family have a wonderful holiday.
You as well. Always a joy to talk to you.
That's John O'Hurley on The Best of Downtown. Make sure you check it out Thursday, Thanksgiving Day, the National Dog Show, presented by Purina. When we come back, there's a new, well, sort of new, Orson Welles movie. Writer and critic Colin Fleming shares his thoughts on The Other Side of the Wind right after this.
When it comes to your health, early detection is the best protection. That's why the St. Joseph Regional Breast Care Center provides 3D mammography to offer better answers and greater peace of mind. Identifying problem areas that a standard mammogram might miss. It provides precise images for all women, including those with dense breast tissue. Call 907-1682 to schedule your 3D mammogram at the St. Joseph Regional Breast Care Center. 3D, providing peace of mind for you, your family, and your loved ones.
Since its founding in 1954, Cross Insurance has grown from a small family-owned agency that started in Bangor, Maine, into one of the largest super-regional insurance agencies in New England. With a network of offices throughout New England, Cross Insurance works with top carriers to provide maximum value to you, your family, and your business. We are proud to be the official insurance broker of the New England Patriots and would welcome the chance to provide security for your team. For more information, visit crossinsurance.com. Cross Insurance, where security meets strength.
There's only one way Hartley's Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram in Newport does business. The right way. Owned and operated for over 60 years by the Hartley family, Hartley's offers the same or even better prices and discounts on vehicles as those offered at mega dealerships. And along with that comes their renowned small dealer service and exceptional attitude toward you, their customers. Hartley's values your business and your trust. You're never pushed, never pressured. No one will chase you around the lot, but no one will ignore you either. Hartley's wants you to feel comfortable at their dealership. So feel free to look around, and Hartley's professional sales staff will always be there when you need help. You'll like the place, you'll like the people, and you'll like the way they do business. The right way. The folks at Hartley's wouldn't do it any other way. Always remember, if you're out there looking around, the best deals aren't in the city, they're in the country. Hartley's Country, at the Triangle in Newport. You'll always be treated the right way at Hartley's.
Now is the time of year to think about saving money around the house. And the experts at Penobscot Home Performance can lend a hand by doing a free energy audit. Whether it's insulation, heat pumps, a new heating system, windows, or doors, Penobscot Home Performance can point you in the right direction and provide you with professional advice and work from the best in the industry. And can also help you save with rebates from Efficiency Maine and more. Call today at 469-6100 for your free energy audit and visit online at PenobscotHomePerformance.com.
How many roads must a man walk down before you call him a man?
Back here on The Best of Downtown, your Sunday morning, Rich Kimball and Carrie Haskell. I like it. I like it, Carrie. Very nice. It's not blowing in the wind. It's the other side of the wind. It's the Orson Welles movie that he worked on for the last couple of decades of his life. Friends, associates have apparently followed his notes and instructions and put it together. And it's now been released on Netflix and selected theaters around the country. A final Orson Welles film. Well, big fan of Welles is our friend, writer and critic Colin Fleming, who says it's not perfect, but it's still pretty good stuff from one of the giants in film history. Who would have thought that more than 30 years after his death, an Orson Welles movie would be one of the most talked about films of the year. But The Other Side of the Wind, I can't think of enough good things to say about it. It's just so different than anything else that's out there.
Very different. I think sometimes when something like this comes along, though, people do have a tendency to want to sort of overlay the praise on it, and tempting, right, to want to confer upon it this notion of masterpiece status. And it's ironic, of course, that Welles, who was hated by the Hollywood system, so much so that he was basically driven out of the country and had to live as a kind of art-making radical in absentia, had to self-finance his films, and now this is as mainstream as you get, right? Netflix. Big, mighty conglomerate Netflix type of thing, and I can imagine Welles would have, well, beyond thinking it ironic, he probably would have been horrified by it. And there's a degree of hypocrisy with it, that now it's this guy, oh, let's have Orson Welles trending, and Orson Welles' face on the side of buses, and it's a shame that it had to come 40 years later for this guy who, frankly, was better at making movies than anyone else.
Well, as the documentary says, they'll love me when I'm dead. And certainly there seems to be a level of appreciation for his work now that exceeds what it was certainly during that period in the 60s and 70s when he was struggling to get films made and financed.
That's apocryphal. He never said that. And it's funny, though, that he was always well-regarded, especially by people in Europe. He was always considered like the big honcho of filmmakers. People like Godard would praise films that even now haven't caught on with Wellesians like Mr. Arcaden. And yeah, he was definitely outside the system, and he's having this renaissance. And, you know, I would say to people, though, that if you're on the Netflix and you're watching this, you also want to make sure to double back and check out films that even in Welles' lifetime were overlooked. And some of them, there's a lot more than Citizen Kane. Some of them, something like Falstaff or Chimes at Midnight film. I don't know how you make a better film than that. I've watched it several times this week because the documentary and The Other Side of the Wind sort of drove me back to that with this notion of betrayal, which was central to Welles' work. And he was betrayed by a system, and people have come along now, these volunteers in service of Orson Welles, as they would call themselves, and they've put this out there. It almost reminds me, do you know who Dean Benedetti is? Benedetti is?
I do not.
Jazz guy who, he would basically follow around Charlie Parker, and he had the tape recorder, and he would bootleg these Charlie Parker sax solos. And he wouldn't really record like the rest of the band sometimes. He just wanted to get to Charlie Parker. The Other Side of the Wind and the way it was made is this composite. It sort of puts me in mind of that, where it's basically like bootlegged Welles, these bits and pieces that people have stuck together that might not be the same thing as what he intended as a cohesive film.
Do you put any stock in the theory, and it's floated a little bit in the documentary, that Welles never really wanted to finish Other Side of the Wind and had trouble wrapping up any of his films?
No, I don't. I think that's the biggest fallacy there is with Orson Welles. This guy did things that were so beneath him. Granted, he was like paid a lot of money, but if you go and you look through like the films he acted in, he played Ben Franklin twice. And like, not a knock on Franklin, but he would slum it unbelievably. So you can go watch him like horror films from the early 1970s. He had enough money to live off of. This was all so he could put it back into his films. Why would anyone debase themselves like that? I mean, really, go on YouTube and watch some of them. They're like Ed Wood type schlock. And out comes Orson Welles. Why would someone do something like that to fight for like 3, 4, 5 years to complete a film? Look how long he worked on Othello. When this reputation sort of came to him, it was when he was in Brazil and he was shooting a documentary. The United States government ordered him to go there and do this while it was like post-production work on Magnificent Ambersen. So he's like frantically like cabling back to Hollywood about like, what are you doing to my film? And he got this reputation as someone who split town, basically, to indulge himself. The guy literally died while writing a script, like Elvis on his throne, but Orson Welles at his desk, for a film that almost surely was never going to be made. This man existed and did everything humanly possible to finish films. And if he didn't finish The Other Side of the Wind, which of course he didn't, because he also was working on so many other things at the same time. That's the nature of the situation that he was put into by a corrupt, bigoted system.
We're talking with Colin Fleming here on Downtown. Well, Other Side of the Wind stands apart from everything that's out there today, but as you look at it in the full complement of Welles films, where does it belong in that list of great Orson Welles movies? Or does it belong there at all, since he really didn't finish it?
It's that notion, again, I think, of like the studio outtake. Like, you have your sort of proper canon by a band, and then you have an assemblage of outtakes. And can it sort of radiate a spirit unto itself that reaches you, that makes it work almost despite itself? Yes. I think The Other Side of the Wind does that, but it doesn't cohere like Chimes at Midnight does. It doesn't even really have Welles' full inflection, as I would think of it, like Amberson does. Amberson's is like 80% Welles, and then it's slashed. We don't really know what percentage of this is Welles. These people had to do yeoman's effort to put this together. But if you watch just the notion of a visual signature, you can watch 10 frames of this film and you know it's Orson Welles. But you can also do that with The Trial. You can do that with anything he ever did. It's that sort of collage aspect, though, where it's 35 millimeter, it's black and white, it's color, it's cinema verite, it's depth of field and precision camera work, and he's clearly the one who is orchestrating all the shots. And he's basically using Gary Graver as a lackey, which I wonder, when I think about Graver's devotion to Welles, it's obviously Welles is the one who's setting up everything with the cameras and just basically saying, okay, run this, now I'm going over here. So it's a fascinating sort of kind of collage experiment, but I wouldn't say it coheres with the kind of specificity a vision that his best films do.
What did you think of a Morgan Neville's Netflix companion piece, the documentary?
Didn't think much of it. I thought if someone had read very much about Welles at all, there was nothing new. I didn't care for the cutie-oochie kind of drop-ins you do with the sound, where you come to the end of the line and then someone else, Welles or Bogdanovich, finishes the line. I think Welles would have been aghast by that. Not that you're trying to placate a deceased artist's notion of their aesthetics when you make a documentary, but I didn't think it worked very well. I thought actually the better documentary was the shorter one. I don't think a lot of people have seen. It's also part of this package where it's like 40 minutes long,
right?
And it's about what went into making this project complete as best as it could be completed. And that, where they're talking about the artificial intelligence use and everything, I thought was really interesting, because it's almost like Welles was grappling with technology in a sense when he made this. Sometimes when you're a genius and it's easy for you to figure things out, as it was for Welles, it can be very liberating to struggle. Does that make sense? Because you don't normally struggle. So when you have to sort of find your paces along that flagstone path through a work of art, and you're making a new kind of art basically within your medium, just what this film is, whatever you want to think about how effective it is a completely new cinematic vocabulary. And I think Welles was, in a sense, trusting that process, that it was going to take as long as it took. And they ran out of money, and then they had to do other things, and you've seen the wine commercials and all that, and he died in 85. He probably thought he was going to come back to it. And when he died, we think of him because he was so large. But he was only 70 years old when he died. I mean, look at, like, John Huston in the film. He doesn't die until, like, what, 1987?
he looks like he's not going to last another frame in the film. Like, he looks as old as you can look.
Colin Fleming discussing Orson Welles' The Other Side of the Wind as we wrap up The Best of Downtown. Thanks, as always, to Colin, Charlotte Wilder, Paula Poundstone, and our friend John O'Hurley. And thanks to you for making us a part of your Sunday. Tomorrow afternoon, we're doing our thing live. Got a great week. It's a condensed week of live shows, but so much goodness for you in the next few days leading up to Thanksgiving. Tomorrow on the program, Maine football. What's up next for them? Coach Joe Harris-Simiak fills us in. And by the way, the selection show is at 12:30 today for Maine Black Bear football to find out where they might be going for the postseason. So we'll be talking about that tomorrow with Joe. Plus Maine men's basketball's Richard Barron, Mike Lowe of the Press Herald, Alan Adams from the Maine Edge with movie reviews, and from the Great White Way, from Broadway, New York City, Bryan Cranston will join us. Last time he was on Broadway, he won a Tony Award for his portrayal of Lyndon Johnson in All the Way. Now he takes on Howard Beale, the mad prophet of the airwaves, in Patty Chayefsky's Network. Bryan Cranston talks with us tomorrow right here on Downtown. We'll see you at 4 o'clock on Z62 Retro Radio. You're gonna be